The 3-2 pitch. Swung on, popped up, shallow center field. Rojas sprinting in, he's under it. He has space, makes the catch, and Michael Lorenzen has thrown the 14th no-hitter in Philadelphia Phillies history. He is being mobbed by his teammates as the Phillies shut out the Nationals 7-0.
Michael Lorenzen throws the 14th no-hitter in Phillies history last night. Just his second start for the Phillies and his first ever start in Philadelphia for the Phillies as he was acquired at the trade deadline from the Detroit Tigers. He walked four batters, struck out five, 124 pitches, and Lorenzen's no-hitter is the fourth of this year's Major League Baseball season. Pretty exciting stuff from Lorenzen and what he was able to do in regards to that no-hitter last night. And you can't imagine, I mean, just thinking of your dreams, right? Your dreams of a Major League Baseball pitcher, you probably dream of coming up with a no-hitter. And that's what Michael Lorenzen did by having that no-hitter last night. Talked about watching Nolan Ryan many times. And Nolan Ryan, all he did was throw seven no-hitters. Lorenzen, Tiger fans probably going, where was this when you were with us? Although Lorenzen wasn't a bad pitcher. He pitched pretty well against the Royals, I think, shortly before he was traded. And he was very impressive and has been in his first two starts with the Phillies. So pretty good stuff that we saw from Michael Lorenzen last night. And now we'll see if he can continue that after throwing a no-hitter last night. Now, the Royals, they were not no-hit. That's good. They hit three home runs, including this one.
And now to deep left field. That is off the top of the wall. It stays in play. Melendez has a double. The Royals think it should be a home run.
After review, the call on the field is overturned. It is a home run.
Yeah. MJ Melendez with two home runs. He had a 445-foot mammoth shot in the second. Another dinger in the ninth from Freddie Fermin. And that was the three solo shots for the Royals. They lose the Red Sox 4-3. Red Sox with three in the fourth inning. And the ball lost up in the lights. Michael Massey couldn't come down with it. It's a tough luck for the Royals. Here, even weirder, tougher luck is when Kyle Isbell's line drive broke a red light bulb used to signify the number of outs on Fenway's manual scoreboard at the bottom of the Green Monster, and it hit the light, went right through the light, and the Royals' Matt Duffy had scored, and he would have scored, but because of the weird situation, it's never happened 111 years at Fenway Park. It was a ground rule double, so guess, of course, what happens to the Royals. You send Matt Duffy back to third. Did he score after that?
No.
No. So the Royals got hosed on a horrible call by an umpire the first game of the series, where it should have went to the 10th inning instead. Next batter, walk-off grand slam. Last night, just really bad luck, a freaky thing. The Royals get a run there. The game's different. Not the end of the world, because the Royals aren't going anywhere. They're 37-79. Red Sox are 59-55. And Jordan Lyles was very good yesterday and got some tough luck. Eight innings, goes all eight innings for the Royals. Gave up four runs on seven hits. Matt Cotrero pretty happy with his starter.
Great job, first of all. Really unfortunate the way that inning unfolded with the ball that got lost in the twilight, you know, to get the inning started. But, you know, and then another inches for MJ catching that ball. But Jordan was really impressive. That's a tough lineup with the lefties, too. His changeup looked good, but what it does for us is it sets us up nicely for the next few days.
And the Royals will go for a split of the four-game set at 6:10 tonight at Fenway. Rookie left-hander Austin Cox, he'll be the opener. He's 0-1, ERA at 3.58, and then Alec Marsh will come in and hopefully do a good job as, in essence, the starter, which it's like if Alec Marsh is, you know, I understand this opener stuff a little bit, but if the next guy's going to go four or five innings anyway, then why didn't you start? I don't. Then why don't you do that with every single night? Have an opener and then go to a starter. I'm kind of confused by that a little bit. Like, what does it truly accomplish? If you know all along Alec Marsh is your starting pitcher, but you're just going to bring him in the third instead of the first. So if Austin Cox you think is better than Alec Marsh to start the game, it's confusing to me.
Yeah.
And you only do it every fifth day. Mm-hmm. You don't do it on a regular basis. I mean, I understand doing it if you don't have any good starting pitchers. And yet, Alec Marsh is not the starting pitcher, but in essence, that's the plan. But yet, Austin Cox is the starting pitcher, but they call him the opener. He's the opener. Well, yeah, every starter's an opener. If you go, Jordan Lyles was the opener last night, and he was the closer.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny to
everything.
Me.
Yeah. I've never under, like, the
Rays started.
The Rays were the ones that started that, mm-hmm. and they called it an opener. And I'm mm-hmm. like, well, an opener is, what's the difference between an opener and a starter? Like, yeah. it's the same. It's like almost just a different term for the same thing,
like,
right?
Let me jump in real quick. I get it if it's a bullpen day. You know what I'm saying? Like, you have no starters available. Your bullpen's exhausted, and you call it an opener as in, hey, we're going with these relievers, and we're going to piecemeal it together, and this guy is not really a starter, so we call him an opener. Okay, a relief pitcher, that's an opener. But then we have another reliever, and we finish the 9 innings. In this case, what I don't understand is when you go with an opener, but then you go to a starting pitcher.
Yeah,
that's what throws
me. Now you're like acting like this guy's a middle reliever, and he's actually a starter.
And the middle reliever is the starter, inning, right? The opener.
Yeah.
So I'm confused.
I get the concept of it, that because the back end is called a closer, so they call this guy an opener because they know he's not going to pitch 5, 6, 7 innings, whatever a normal starter would do.
But every starter's an opener.
Yeah, but it's like, okay, whatever.
Crazy.
I guess, like, that's philosophy you want to go with. That's fine, like when the Rays did it. But
sure.
It's like, it doesn't make a lot of sense if you're like, your guy is a starter that's going to come in after your opener. Like, just put him out there and get started and figure the rest of it. Have your opener come out when he normally would as a reliever.
Right. Do whatever you want to do, I guess. Royals and Red Sox game 4 tonight of that 4-game set. The Chiefs are inching closer to the start of the preseason. They'll face the Saints in New Orleans on Sunday. Pregame 11 o'clock, kickoff at noon. The Chiefs are off today before taking the field tomorrow for their 16th practice of training camp. You know, one thing we haven't really talked much about, and in fact, the national media really hasn't talked about it either, and I think that's the fact that they don't think Eric Bieniemy is really calling the plays all the time. But Eric Bieniemy left to be the OC with the Washington Commanders, and there's a little bit of controversy in Washington because Ron Rivera has made a few comments that he said, I really didn't word very well, and because there's some players trying to adjust the intensity of Eric Bieniemy, and Bieniemy came out and talked about it yesterday at a press conference, and Ron Rivera clarified what he was trying to say. So there's a little bit of controversy there in Washington. And listen, coaches at every level ruffle the feathers of players, whether it's peewee baseball, whether it's youth basketball, whether it's high school football or volleyball or college or pro. Coaches are going to ruffle the feathers of the players. The players are going to ruffle the feathers of the coaches. It happens, no matter what level. So, yeah, I'm sure there's players that aren't happy Eric Bieniemy at times if he really goes after him. But you know what? That means you maybe are a little bit thin-skinned, because sometimes coaches are trying to get the best out of you. And if you can't handle it, then you're not going to be as successful as you can be. So, yeah, and sometimes can they be over the top? Yeah, some coaches can be, and maybe sometimes abusive. I don't think that's Eric Bieniemy at all. But anyway, that was a story in Washington. Let's focus back on the Chiefs. New offensive coordinator is Matt Nagy. He's been offensive coordinator before with the Chiefs, and he went to the Bears, had a pretty decent first year or two with the Bears, and then kind of went south after that. Never really had a great quarterback, of course. He's the offensive coordinator this year, and I don't think I don't think the Chiefs are going to skip a bit. I don't think they're going to skip a beat. They're not going to skip a bit. I think they'll be just fine with Matt Nagy as offensive coordinator, don't you?
Or better than what they were.
Okay. All right. So you have no concerns.
Not at all.
Yeah, I don't either. No. And I don't think anybody else in the country has concerns.
No.
Which is, you know, Eric Bieniemy is going to sit there and go, man, I just can't get any respect. But here's Matt Nagy on what he wants from the offense going into the first preseason game on Sunday in New Orleans.
We throw a lot at them in the training camp, a lot of volume. Now we pull back a little bit, and we want to be able to see them now play fast. So you can at times play a little slow in practice, whether you're tired or you're thinking. In the game, they get their game plan, and they can roll. So now we can truly evaluate them and see. You know, there's no scripted periods of cards or knowing it's this defense or that defense. I mean, you're going to go out there, and defenses are usually scaled back as well. But you get to see guys' talent, and this is an opportunity for them. There's only so many people that can make the roster. And I think Coach Reed does a phenomenal job of explaining to the guys, like, listen, if you don't make this roster, make it hard on us and make it easy for somebody else to pick you up.
I'd add to that, if you don't make this roster, you're on the Super Bowl defending champions and almost made our team, you're going to be attractive to somebody else and you might make another team. It's just that we're deep. You might go to a worse team, but you'll be an NFL player, and you'll make our opening day roster. So that's another reason why you should be motivated, even if you don't know if you're going to make the team or you won't make the team, or you know you're not going to make the team, or you think you're not going to make the team, is, yeah, you want to push everybody to be better, but at the same time, you're trying to get somebody's attention so you can get signed somewhere else. You know, Caden Davis is with Arizona Cardinals from Ellsworth. And, you know, if he gets cut by the Cardinals, obviously his job is to look as good as he possibly can, so maybe somebody else would grab him. Mm-hmm. Or last year, you know, he was with the Broncos. Actually, he did okay, it seemed like. And then next thing you know, he really couldn't latch on with anybody the rest of the year. It's tough to make an NFL roster, man. It is tough.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, any sport. It's tough to make an NBA roster. It's tough to make a Major League Baseball roster. People have no idea how great these players are that don't even get to play. I mean, I don't think people understand how great these players are that are just practice squad players. I don't think people understand how great they are.
Yeah.
You know, it's how great basketball players are in the G League.
Yeah.
People have no idea.
No. I mean,
they're scrubs. No, they're not scrubs.
No. And we've talked about that before, right? Like the 12th guy on the roster that's sitting on the end of the bench in the NBA is an amazing basketball player, right? Mm-hmm. Like they're one of the best. But they're not playing because they're behind some of the best in the world, like that aren't just the best at their profession, right? They're the top of everybody everywhere.
Right.
And so, yeah, I mean, if you want to make that 53, yeah, if you're the 53rd guy on the roster, you're still an outstanding football player, obviously, and you had to work hard to get that spot. And so if you want to make that 53, whether it be with this team, whether it be with another team, you do. You have to grind right now. You have to put in the work. You have to show something in these preseason games, too, for those other teams that you're trying to get a job with, right? Yeah. The Chiefs have everything they need because they see in practice and in games. Mm-hmm. But this is where you show out. This is where you try to do something. Maybe earn a job with some other team, because you know you're not going to be on this 53, man. Like, there's probably each year maybe six or seven spots that are maybe up for grabs, I think, if you're lucky, right? That
on the good teams.
Yeah, like on the Chiefs is mm-hmm. what I'm talking
right.
about. Like you know, if you're here and you're putting in work, but you can learn from Andy Reid and Matt Nagy and Steve Spagnuolo, too, on the defensive end, and if you can learn those things from those guys and then show something on tape in one of these preseason games, somebody says, hey, I like that. We don't have this position solidified yet. Let's bring him in and put him on a roster, you know, and make a deal where he can come to our place and be a contributor. And if you can get that, then that's going to be great. Caden Davis is a great example of that, right? Mm-hmm. Like, if he doesn't make the Cardinals, maybe he'll have another shot. But maybe we'll make the Cardinals. Who knows? You know, and there's opportunities out there, and you really got to take advantage of everything that you can, whether you think you're going to be on that team or not. Don't just, like, sit down because you know you're not going to be on the 53, man.
I'll give you an example. I talked to Hunter Butke probably 3 weeks ago. I saw him at the wellness center. He was working out. Hunter played football at Beloit, and he was not a tight end at Beloit, and he was a running back at the end and carried the ball a ton. And then he went to Fort Hays State, became a Division II All-American as a tight end. I believe it was his junior year. Had a lot of injuries his final year. And then he was hoping to maybe get an invite to NFL camp, this or that. So the USFL, I don't know if they're still going. There's the XFL and the USFL. But anyway, he went to a deal. I believe it was in St. Louis. 200 people were invited to then you're trying to impress so that you can go to a combine for the USFL in Texas, I believe it was. Do you know how many players they were taking out of the 200 they invited St. Louis to then move on to the combine? Out of 200, how many do you think they were actually, how many do you think they selected out of 200 move on to the combine?
I'm going to guess like 40.
10.
Really?
And Hunter Butke was one of them.
Yeah.
Hunter Butke is one of 10. So he, out of 200 players that I'm sure all are very good athletes, like Hunter Butke, Hunter Butke impressed enough to where he was, and that's just how he explained it to me, he was one of the, you could say lucky 10, or he earned it, whatever, had a good day, and then he was working out and getting ready to go to a combine for the, I believe it was USFL.
Yeah.
Okay? And this is just to make the USFL. We're not talking the National Football
League. Yeah.
Now, multiply all that I just told you by about a million, because it's hard just to get invited to a combine for the USFL or XFL. Now imagine trying to be invited to an NFL camp.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that insane?
Yeah, it's crazy.
It is. I mean, and if you don't work hard, maybe you have unbelievable natural athletic ability. Okay, fine. But eventually, if you don't work hard, you're going to flame out. See Johnny Manziel in the Netflix docuseries that they have out right now. You can get by on talent for so long, but eventually, when you get to play the big boys, you got to work or you're done.
Which, at some point, you're going to put in the work, and if you don't, it's going to show.
Yeah, absolutely. So that leads me into this part before we have Mark Johnson, the voice of Colorado Buffaloes, on here in about 5 or 6 minutes. So I watched the 1 hour, 12-minute documentary on Johnny Manziel. I think there could have definitely been a longer. I think they could have had a longer version or more episodes. I felt like it was kind of jam-packed and rushed when I watched it. I wanted to know more that's how I was left, is I was wanting to know more. But there were some things in it, and if you haven't seen it yet, I apologize if I'm going to ruin a few things for you. But there's a few things in it that made me laugh and just kind of blew my mind, but yet it didn't surprise me. The thing that really stood out to me watching it was that, well, first of all, I don't blame Johnny Manziel one single bit for going to get his money by signing autographs, because the college would build a brand new stadium because of him. I mean, they were making money over money, his jerseys and everything else, insane. That's why you have NIL now, name, image, and likeness. And you've got now open up to where you can get a sponsorship deal. But what cracked me up, there's a few things in this documentary that cracked me up, but I think the thing that was there was a few things. Like, first of all, they had to come up with a story to hide the autograph part. And all they did was basically say that Johnny Manziel's family was rich because of oil. Okay? Now, I want to stop there for a second. Where the hell were all the journalists back in 2012 and 13? Because think about this for a second. The 2012 Heisman Trophy went to Johnny Manziel. Runner-up was Manti Te'o with the fake girlfriend. And Colin Klein was Mr. Perfect because he didn't have all kinds of weird things happening. He was third, right? Manti Te'o's thing went crazy, and nobody verified or fact-checked anything if you watch that docuseries until somebody eventually did, and it took a very, very long time. So nobody fact-checked stuff, which is amazing to me. Back then, it was better than now. I wouldn't be surprised now as much. Nobody fact-checked to check in to say, are his parents that rich or not?
Yeah.
Nobody did it. They just took it as fact. It was a made-up story by his best buddy. Okay, so that one cracked me up, and it's just pretty sad when it comes to journalism. Nobody wanted to look into it. But the thing that really had me going was how they went about avoiding drug tests or having somebody take his drug test or pee in a cup for him. He had a four-stringer do that in college, a four-string quarterback. And then the one that was really something is he had a bender before he was supposed to have this big workout with the Browns, and in fact so bad that receivers were hungover and didn't attend it. And so he had his agent and other like people like running routes for him. But then when they went to the combine, or they were going to get rid of the combine, his agent was like, we got to get him out of there by a certain period of time. He can't be there the whole time because, you know, he went and did this and that and whatever else. So they made up a story about his dad having a heart attack, and he never had a heart attack, to try to get Johnny out sooner because, yeah, he's got to see his dad who had a heart attack. The lies that these guys went to. And yet Johnny Manziel, he got suspended for half a game. With all that autograph money and everything else.
College,
And the NCAA, you know, just to me, just magnified the joke that they are when I watched this thing. But I honestly, listen, I didn't mind Johnny Manziel when he played. I liked his flair. I didn't like the money thing so much, the money sign too often. I loved how he played. But, I mean, this guy, like Cliff Kingsbury says, he could have been unbelievable if he actually tried.
Yeah.
Like, if he really worked that, he could run unbelievable, but that just was never in his DNA. And then, of course, all kinds of issues once he was done, or once he went to Cleveland and was drafted, all kinds of issues off the field in regards to his mental health, this, this, and this. I don't want to ruin anything. Everybody else can watch it. But didn't that just kind of blow you away, that how far they went to cover all these things up and somehow work because nobody was smart enough to, like, actually check into it in the media? That's what blows me away. The media was so gullible.
Listen, there's the Manti Te'o one in this one were things that I watched that I was like,
that should have been vetted.
I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Because
the media didn't cover it.
The media just did what they did, and we kind of took it, right?
Yes.
Like, we just went with it, right?
Yes, right.
I had no idea. Like, I literally stopped paying attention to Johnny Manziel the moment he went to the NFL because he didn't do anything in the NFL,
right?
Like, and that was really of substance, right? So, but I remember, like, he didn't start that money thing until after he started signing autographs and the NCAA started getting at him.
It was his second year in college.
He started that money thing after that.
It was basically to shove it in the NCAA's face.
It was like, yeah, okay, whatever, dude. Uh-huh. And I remember talking about that at the time. It's like, I don't know if that's a good look or not, but whatever. You do you and have fun with it, because I was already tired of his antics, right? And I was probably a little frustrated that he won the Heisman the year before over Colin Klein and all that. That was probably in my thought process too. But I listen, like, there was so much going on there that I didn't even realize the family having money thing was not real.
Yeah, right.
Even today, until I watched that documentary.
Yeah,
like, I just thought I thought that was a true story.
Right, and it wasn't.
Right. And I'm sitting here like, oh, okay, well, I didn't know that. I didn't hear that side of the story, that they actually were not loaded.
10 years later, we get the truth.
Yeah.
And that's because they admit it.
Yeah, but there's other things in there that were like, oh, well, I didn't really know that.
Yeah.
Because we didn't really get the full story on that deal.
If you haven't seen it, go see it. It's Untold. It's on Netflix. Johnny Manziel. And then they're going to have one with the Florida Gators. And they're going to have one with Urban Meyer and his train wreck of a year at Jacksonville as head coach. I mean, these things are pretty good. Like I said, I think this could have been 3 or 4 episode series.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't. I think they kind of crowded it, shoved it all into one. But it still was interesting, to say the least. And then we changed gears real quickly. Man, I saw this here. Of course, what's happening in Maui is just unbelievable. But the Lahana Civic Center is home of the Maui Classic. It's completely gone now because of wildfires.
So pictures from that.
The Maui Classic will not be in Maui this year, obviously. It's going to be somewhere else. Man, what a horrible deal. I have a friend that just went to Hawaii recently, and he's just absolutely blown away that all this stuff is gone. He's like, I was just there a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Hmm. And I've never been, and Maui was one of the spots I want to go in Hawaii, and they're going to have to wait a long time before that'll get rebuilt.
Yeah.
People would jump in the ocean and save themselves. Because think about it, you're on an island.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Who would think there'd be a wildfire that engulfed a whole island?
It's crazy, man.
It is. It's insane. Man, we're thinking of them, no doubt.